Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The advice would probably be, you can actually say a bit more of what is in your head. I was quite quiet as a my early 20s. And I think people are always quite surprised, like when they get to know me, how, you know, chatty I actually am. And I think I would just say, just be a bit more confident. Nobody's really judging you. They're all too busy judging each other. So, just say what's on your mind a little bit more. You don't have to stand quietly in the corner. Don't be so polite, basically. It's an incredibly polite early 20-year-old woman, which often gets you into trouble sometimes. Definitely say more what's on your mind. Don't worry about what other people are thinking.
Good day, good people. My name is Brad King, and you are listening to the Downtown Writers Jam After Party. If you don't know, we are part of the Solid Listen Podcast Network. If you do, we are also part of the Solid Listen Podcast Network. We are coming to you from deep inside the jam bunker today. We have a special guest who you will not hear, but my girlfriend is in town. Also dog sitting a dog named Bodza, who's amazing. I think I have run them off because I have been talking to my computer, which is only a little weird if you're not podcasting. Today on the program is a returning guest who's lovely, Louise Mumford. Her book, The Safe House, came out in May. She was on the video podcast last year and is from Wales. So, you know, we always talk about that. I always tell people Wales is the Appalachia of the UK. So I feel a kinship with those folks. And she's just lovely. So if you have forgotten, she was born and lives in South Wales and was a teacher for 15 years and was discovered by her publisher at the Prima Donna Festival in 2019. So she'd been teaching. And then all of a sudden, she took this leap and became a writer and is amazing. And hearing her journey is a lot of fun, which you can hear on the video podcast. And today we just had fun with stories. So she lives in Cardiff with her husband and spends her time trying to get down on paper all the marvelous and frightening things that happen in her head. And she's a member of the Crime Writers Association. And if you listen to the program, you know I've had lots of writers and friends over across the pond who are part of that, who have been here. So it's always lovely to have the crime folks here as well. As you know, we got three shows, The Jam, which comes out every Wednesday, and our two new short form programs, Jam Sessions, which is our nonfiction show. We take a deep dive into shit that I think matters. And what you're about to hear, The After Party, which is a weird ass storytelling Q&A. It's quickly becoming my favorite show. The other two are great. This is my favorite because it's literally just writers telling stories on themselves. A couple things you can do to help us out. Tell your friends about us. That's how people find out about the show. And it's how they find out about new books. And leave us a review. So if you got an iPad or an iPhone, head over to Apple Podcasts. You can leave us a little star review, but it also helps if you write something. And writing on your phone is a pain in the ass, so you can, you know, use voice to text. It's cool. Just edit it. You know autocorrect. It's a fucker. If you don't have an iPad or iPhone, head over to our Facebook page. There's this little tab called Reviews. I think it's self-explanatory from there. At our website, The Writer's Jam, you can buy books of anybody you've had on the show, or not you've had, that we've had on the show. Get book reviews, books we're reading, people we've had on the show, other stuff that I picked up. I just read The Storyteller by Dave Grohl. It's fantastic. If you're a Gen Xer, even if you're not into music, like I'm not really into music, that's a good book. You can also sign up for the monthly newsletter. Get book recommendations, reviews, like that great review I just gave The Storyteller. Highlights from the podcast, other things going on around the web. Sign up. It don't cost nothing. A couple things you can do to support the Solid Listen Podcast Network. We got a Patreon. So for $1, $5 a month, commercial-free episodes, bonus content, you get stuff before anybody else. Or for $4.99 a month, same thing through Apple. They got a subscription for all 12 programs on the Solid Listen Podcast Network. Not a bad deal. And I say it all the time, but it's absolutely true. Miles and Nicole have built the nicest podcast place on the internet. So, and all this fuckery that's happening in America, and if you're not here, don't read the news. There's nothing good coming out over here. And it's nice to have some happy, nice stuff around, even if it's just for an hour. I appreciate you stopping by the bunker to spend some time with us. This is one of my favorite things to do. And I hope it's one of your favorite things to listen to. And I hope right now you will sit back and enjoy my conversation with Louise Mumford. Why do you write?
It's quite a simple answer, actually, because I can't not write now. I think probably when I was working as a teacher, so when I was doing that, I didn't write loads because I often didn't have the energy and the mental energy to kind of write a lot. But now that I concentrate more on it and I'm not doing as much teaching, I can't switch it off. So if it kind of backs up in your head, you know, the characters and what this, because they carry on talking and doing stuff even when you're not writing it down. So you kind of feel like you have to catch, it's like watching a soap, you have to catch up with what's happened and get it written down. So yeah, I write because I can't really not write anymore. I've discovered that holidays are not as relaxing as they used to be because I'm kind of thinking, oh, I could write that chapter, you know, in 20 minutes. Well, you know, my husband's having a nap or something. And it's a bit like, it's part of my routine now. If I don't do it, I feel like it's a bit like exercise. You feel a bit rubbish if you haven't done exercise, have you, that week? I feel rubbish if I haven't written.
Do you remember the first time that you knew that feeling?
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't in the first book. It was when I was writing the second book. And it was probably exacerbated by lockdown a bit. We had, you guys did as well, we had quite a few lockdowns in the UK. And it was almost like a carte blanche in the UK. You know, lockdown was like, feet up, you don't have to do anything. Make a sourdough starter, or you could do some knitting, or you can jigsaws became wildly popular during the UK shops just sold out of jigsaws. We were so rock and roll, and for me it was like, well, I just want to do my job. I just want to write. I know I can kind of have a holiday from my job if I wanted, but I don't. I want to keep on doing it. So yeah, that's kind of when I realized it.
Okay, here's the next question. So what's the question or statement that people say to you about writing that drives you crazy? What do you say to them? But what do you really want to say to them?
Okay. So what kind of drives me crazy is also a really, really nice thing to say. So it's when readers say to you, when's the next one out? When's the next book out? Which is lovely. That's a great thing. However, it's not so great when they've literally just put down the newest book that you've written and they put it down. And the thing is, writing a book can often take years, you know, to get from idea to something published in someone's hand. And then readers read it in a day, you know, half a day sometimes. And then they go, so when's your next one? It's like, well, it's not going to be for another year at least. So it's a lovely question because it shows that they're interested, but it's also really frustrating when they put the book down and go, yeah, so I've done that one. What's next? It's great when you've got a back catalogue. I haven't got a big like backlist yet, you know, of titles where I can go, well, have you read, you know, this one or that one? But definitely that's the one that kind of frustrates me the most. I don't think readers always understand how long it takes to write something.
My old boss used to call that a high-class problem.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been so successful, I can't keep up with what you need.
Yeah, it is. Definitely, yeah. But you feel like saying, well, you know, I haven't actually come up with an idea yet. And then when I do, I'm obviously going to, you know, triple think it and decide that it's rubbish and then start on something else. Yeah. And then when I've written the thing, I'm going to decide that's rubbish and I'm going to have to edit it. And so, you know, I've got a lot to do.
I have a couple friends who are writers who I literally read their books the first day they're out and then immediately text them, when's the next one coming out?
Yes, you're that one.
And they're like, you know better. I'm like, doesn't make it. I'm still a fan. Doesn't make a difference. I'm going to need you to write faster. This is another one. And this, I have been surprised by the answers that I've gotten on this one. So I'm interested to see. But everybody has that one review, that one review on a thing they've written.
Yeah.
What is yours?
Yeah, you do. So we have a site in the UK, a website. I think you have it in the US as well, which is called Goodreads.
Yeah.
So it is a big reader site. It's not really meant for authors particularly. It's more for readers to talk about the books and give very honest reviews. And so as an author, you kind of stay off it. But with my first book, you do read all the reviews, even though you tell yourself you're not going to, you do read them. And I remember going on Goodreads the one time and finding this one star. So it was one star. And it only had a couple of words underneath as the review. And the review was, ugh, why do I read this stuff? Like saying, like replying back. Yeah, I think you can actually reply back, but I didn't, luckily. And we're going, well, why do you read this stuff? Clearly, you don't enjoy it. Read something else. It would be better for me. It would be better for you. Everyone would have a nicer time if you hadn't have read this kind of thing. So yeah, they do. And it's always the bad stuff, the bad reviews always stick in your head more than all the lovely things people say. You know, you can have hundreds of really lovely reviews and you always remember the ones that, you know, kind of twist the knife a little bit. And I don't even mind bad reviews because that's life. You're gonna have people who don't enjoy your books because not everybody's the same, and that's brilliant. That's what makes this whole Technicolored universe that we live in. But it's when they're just particularly mean about it. You know, you don't have to be mean. You can say you didn't like it. You don't have to insult me. You know, so it's, yeah, definitely. They stuck in your mind. And that one stuck in my mind because it just started off with that, ugh, why do I read this stuff?
I like that first word is that's the killer.
Ugh. Yeah. Ugh.
Ugh. I interviewed Hannah Mary McKinnon and her worst was somebody just said meh. And she was like, yeah, right? But that's when I heard, ugh, I'm like, well, you didn't even read anything after that because it's just like, ah, that fucking word.
Yeah, exactly.
God damn, buddy.
To write the review. It was literally just those couple of words. Yeah.
Yeah. You're making a guttural moan on the page.
Yeah.
I'm sure if they would have just said, I don't know why I read this stuff, you'd have been like, ah, you know.
Yeah. It's that first word, like, oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It definitely was the first word. That,
yeah.
And I think I will remember that, you know, until that my dying day, definitely.
You'll tell that story forever.
I will.
Yeah.
Because actually, when you talk to readers, a lot of them don't read, or they do read reviews, but they don't really take them into account much if they like the sound of the book. If they like the sound of the book, they're going to give it a go themselves. So, yeah.
It was, and that's what I've told writers forever. I'm like, it's real easy to get caught up in the one thing. I just looked at the positive of that bad thing.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Best way to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because readers are going to tell you what they think. And you just kind of got to not care.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You do. Definitely. That is a really sensible way to think of it.
But I also know, like, you're also going to read them all and have those, you know, internal moments of like, ah, yeah, that one hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And actually, to be fair, you often learn stuff about your writing from those reviews as well, because you're too far into it. You're too deep into it to notice stuff, but they do. And so it is worth sometimes reading the bad ones, because they often pick up on something you might not have noticed.
I think it's better to hire like a graduate student to do a text analysis and say, here were the patterns we saw.
Yes.
As opposed to you sifting through them and trying to figure out what's just anger and what's, you know, like, that's good. Those are some good points you guys are making.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've got my husband for that. He does that for me sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Ready for the next one?
Okay. Go for it.
So what's your best writing epiphany and how did it come about?
Okay. So my best writing epiphany came about probably again on the second book. And it was the realization that my rather chaotic writing style does actually work. I don't have a process. So some authors very much, you know, they will plan a lot beforehand and they will know their characters inside out and they will probably know it down to each chapter as to what each chapter is going to be. And I don't really do that. I kind of set off with a character and a location and off I go. And I kind of write the book and the book happens as I'm writing it. And then I've got to go back afterwards and I put it up all up on a board and I work out, you know, which bit should go where and, you know, what's not working. But it was in the second book that I kind of realized that was just the way I worked. That wasn't wrong, because I'd heard a lot of writers talk about, you know, how very regimented it was almost. And also that they wrote in a very regimented way from like they got up at 6 a.m. You know, they did their yoga and their morning meditation and they had their green tea and they did all of this. And then they started at 8 o'clock and then they wrote until lunchtime and then they went off and did more yoga and, you know, more meditation, all that. And I don't do it like that. I'm kind of very scattered throughout the day as to when I write. And it's just that realization that whatever works for you, don't worry about it. It works for you. So just stick with it. You don't have to change to fit some sort of rule book that doesn't even exist.
It's one of the reasons we talk so little about process on this show.
Yeah, because there isn't one. There isn't a set process.
Yeah, you have to sort of find your way through what it looks like. So when you say you put it up on a board, do you then like turn those into note cards and put them up on a board? Or do you actually physically have like the pages up?
Oh, no. I kind of put almost every chapter onto a little note card and I pin it up on the board and then I can move them around and see which chapter works better, maybe in a different place. Or if it's got a bit saggy at one place, then, you know, there's too much kind of not going on. So I do it that way because I'm quite visual. I think it helps to have it all up in one place so you can see it. And I'm sure there are writing programs that do that for you. I'm sure there's like software that can do that to your manuscript. But I'm a little bit old school. I quite like the idea of, you know, cutting up the cards and pin them on the board. It helps. The actual doing of it helps me to see the story.
Yeah, people that use Scrivener, I tried it. It does not work for me at all. It has that capability and I'm the same way. I need what? So what's on the note card?
Just a really like brief summary of whatever that chapter was. And specifically how it ends, because I quite like knowing how I've linked it into the next chapter and, you know, does it all flow nicely? So it can be like really spotty points, you know, like literally what the characters are doing, or if it's they're not doing much, what is the, what's the emotion? What's that chapter emotionally about? Yeah.
So, and you just kind of figured that out, like, here's what I need to put on the card for me to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit like taking notes, I guess, isn't it? When you're listening to a lecture, what are you going to write down from your lecture? What are the points? So yes. Yeah. And it works brilliantly for me. Probably wouldn't work for another writer.
I imagine it would. You'd be surprised. I hear a lot of versions of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Does it help with your editing? Like when you're editing, you look and you're like, okay, well, this is what's supposed to be going on in the chapter. Now I'm reading it again. And like, that's only half the chapter.
Yeah. You can definitely see as well when you've lost the kind of, because I do know about story structure and like how traditional stories work and all that sort of stuff. I've learned about that. I do know it. And you can see where you're not hitting that, you know, if you've got it up on the board, you can actually visually see it. To be honest, I didn't know in the first book anything about story structure. I just wrote the book. And luckily, I managed to hit a lot of those points kind of subconsciously almost. And then I went and actually read the books I possibly should have read before I wrote my first novel about plotting a story. And I think also you've got to not be too worried about following every piece of advice that you're given. So there are loads of books about plotting and they'll tell you to do all sorts of stuff and that you've got to do this in your first act and this in your third act, and you don't have to follow it all. You can just pick the bits that work for you. You don't have to take every bit of advice. Just do what feels right for your story.
But if the gun is on the wall in the first act, it better be fired by the third.
Oh yeah. Do you know what it's really useful for as well? Time of day. When you suddenly you've missed a day, it's like, how is it nighttime again? What happened to the rest of that day? So it's really good for tracking that. And when you're in the right season, because suddenly you've gone from, it was really hot and then suddenly it's snowing. Why is it suddenly snowing? Which, I mean, with climate change, you can get away with that a lot easier now, especially in the UK. Yeah. You can have a tornado in the morning and then, you know, it can be sunny by the afternoon.
All right. So the last one for this part about being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think, fitting to end this way. What does it, for you, what does it mean to be a writer?
So, I mean, you can be flippant with this one. You can go, being a writer means you never read a book or watch a film in the same way as you used to before you started writing, because you're always analyzing it like, oh, that was a good twist. Or, ooh, that midpoint in Act 3 was really, really good. In Act 2, sorry, was really, really good. So being a writer means you don't get to have that sort of childhood love of stories that you used to have. But I think I do actually admire when I've read something or watched something and it's blown me away. I think my admiration for the director and the writer is much more than it would have been if I didn't understand the blood, sweat and tears that probably went into making that the perfect nugget of entertainment that it is. So there's the flippant way of looking at it, and I think the serious way of looking at it is being a writer means I get to do the thing that my, you know, the 12-year-old version of me always wanted to do but didn't think she could, because she, you know, was a working class girl who came from a small Welsh town, you know, didn't have massive opportunities, went to a local comprehensive school and all of those things. It's being able to do the thing that I actually loved, that I always loved and always wanted to do. So you can take it in a serious way as well, that you get to go back and say to that little girl, you actually got to do that. Well done.
And I find that as writers, we have to first do the flip one before we actually open up emotionally about what it actually means.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I couldn't have gone straight into that. That would have just felt a little bit, you know, cringe. But yeah.
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 All right, we're going to take a quick break. You probably heard the little dog barking, so I'm going to let him out, and then we're going to come back and we're going to do the second part.
Okay.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, as always, you guys are not hearing some of the best parts of the interview because we were at a break. So the first part was about writing and the writer. And the second part, which is my actual favorite part, is about you. So here's the first question. What makes you the happiest?
That is a good question. I guess being a writer, I should say that writing makes me very happy. But it also makes you very miserable at times as well. So that's a bit of a roller coaster. I think that if I'm talking about like where you feel, so I'm going to go for content when you're talking about happiness, is feeling content. For me, it's always the very kind of quiet moments. And I think I'm a bit of an introvert. Well, I know I am an introvert with who can do extrovert very well, but is generally an introvert. So my happiest times are always kind of very quiet times. Like the moments that you think to yourself, oh, you should try and remember this because this is a time when you're really happy. So it's like going to the pub on a sunny afternoon with my husband because we've just decided that, you know, it's 4 o'clock. We can go to the pub, we can sit outside in the beer garden, have a nice drink, enjoy the sun, and then, you know, walk back. And it's nothing exciting. It's not a, you know, round the world holiday or winning an award or anything like that. It's just those moments where you didn't really want anything else. There was nothing that was really bugging you at that time. It was just nice. It was just happy. People are always so sniffy about the word nice. You know, you should never say, well, I was as a teacher, I was always taught to say to the children, don't use the word nice. There's always a better word to use. And actually nice can be, well, it can be lovely. It's the times that you try to remember as little snapshots.
Yeah, I think as the older I've gotten, the more I've realized that what you just said, the content, Like when you just are sitting somewhere and you don't have a thought.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you laughed, right? It's like to just have that mind like still water is, there's just nothing better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think we often make, there are lots of problems that happen to us, obviously, but I think we often make a lot of problems just in our own heads from various reasons. And the times when those kind of voices just quieten down a bit, they're the nicest times.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That was a good answer. So let's see if we can keep this going. No pressure, but the next four have to be equally amazing. So in your adult life, what is the most profound way or ways that you have changed in your adult life?
My adult life. So I think I said earlier that I was quite quiet as in my early 20s. And I don't know why I thought I would be suited to this, but I decided to become a teacher. So as a teacher, you can't really be the quiet, shy and retiring type because your class will eat you alive. So the thing that changed me the most is at 23, I did teacher training. So teacher training is, if you haven't trained to be a teacher, you do some bits in like a university setting and you do lectures and read books and all that sort of stuff. And then they chuck you into a school. Is the other part of it. Literally, they just throw you into a school, they throw you into classes, and you sink or swim. And I think that's definitely what changed me the most, because you had to decide, well, I had to decide what kind of person I wanted to be in the classroom. And the kind of teacher you are in the classroom has lots of links back to the kind of person that you actually are. So I had to work out who I was. What were my boundaries? What did I find funny? What would I not accept? What would I actually just shrug off? You know, what did I think was important in terms of talking to pupils? You know, if I was interacting with them, did I even think that was important? Did I want to know about my pupils outside of the classroom? Did I want to take on a more kind of social care aspect of them? And yeah, definitely, without a doubt, that changed me and made me more confident in who I was and easier. And it was easier for me to relate to other people, because you saw so many different teenagers and they all had different problems and they all, some of them liked you and some of them hated you. And it just, you know, it was a real trial by fire, but it did create the person that I am today.
Yeah. Well, that would change you at 23.
It would. It did.
So tell me the story of a time that a parent or mentor or friend, like somebody, influenced your life.
So this would definitely have to be, it's something quite small, actually. So it's to do with running. I always like exercise. So I've always been a bit of an exercise nut. And I used to do lots of like aerobics videos and DVDs and stuff, because I couldn't really afford the gym or anything like that. Yeah. You know, you're buy a DVD.
Yeah.
You do that for ages then. One DVD keeps you going quite a long time. So I decided, I met my husband and he was really into running. He loved running. And he was always like, well, why don't you run? It's cheap. You get a pair of trainers, obviously, but you'd have to buy much else, really. A pair of shorts, t-shirt, go running. And I thought, but I was always like, oh, no, I don't want to go running. People see me, you know, they'll be out of breath and, you know, I'll be sweating and all that sort of stuff. And he said to me, well, you're probably never going to see those people again. So why do you care what their opinion is? You're going to be running past them. You're not going to meet up with them again.
Right.
And it kind of switched something in my head. It was like, oh, that's a really good point, you know. Whose opinion do I care about? I don't really care about those people that I'm running past, not in a horrible way. You know, I wouldn't push them into a river or anything, but I don't care about them. So does it matter if I run past them looking a bit sweaty and, you know, and red faced and flushed, and I'm not running like an athlete? No, it doesn't. And I've kind of applied that to other things as well. So it kind of works when you think, whose opinion do you really care about?
I mean, that's a big, I think all of this is tying together in terms of like, don't be quiet. Who yeah. am I? Like figuring out like that sounds yeah. like that sounds like the journey of this Q&A.
This has become a lot deeper than I realized.
I tell people, you know how this show works. It doesn't matter how goofy it seems, we're going to end up in places. So this is a fun one because everybody's always got like the story of like, oh, I met this weird person or this famous person, or like, so what's your favorite, like, I met this person story?
Okay, so this is not a famous person because I haven't really met any famous people apart from a woman called Maureen who did a UK reality TV show called Driving School. And she was at a restaurant the one time and nobody knows who she is. So there's no point in telling that story. So instead, I'll go for a coolest person. And we went to California. We did a motorhome trip around parts of California. It was really cool. And we stopped at a campsite called Fallen Leaf Lake. So it's very close to Lake Tahoe. So most people, if they're going to a lake, they're going to go to Lake Tahoe. They're not going to go to Fallen Leaf Lake. So Fallen Leaf Lake is really quiet and it was lovely. And we could walk down from our motorhome onto the pebbly beach. And every day that we were there, there would be this guy with a guitar. And he would walk up and down the beach, which wasn't very full of people, this pebbly shore. And he would just play songs and talk to people. And he was this really cool kind of like hippie guy in his 70s. And we were talking to him. He was like, yeah, I just spend my time. I've worked my days. I spend my time now when it's nice. I just bring my guitar and I would talk to you all. And then I go home, get some lunch. And if I don't have a nap, I'll come back out again and, you know, do it again. And I just thought, what a brilliant way to spend what is possibly, you know, maybe the last bit of your life.
Yeah.
Just walking down this lake, talking to tourists in this little quiet spot, singing the songs that you like on your guitar and having nice conversations. So he was definitely the coolest person that I've met. And I can't even remember what his name was. I tried to remember what his name was.
Yeah. That's not the point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was just brilliant. And I always remember that lake, and it'll turn up in a book one day, I'm sure, but it was just a fantastic experience.
Yeah. Some of the neatest interactions, I travel all over, or I did before all this. And the neatest interactions are always those that are sort of like, you know, transient, like they happen and you're just like, oh my God, that was like a 2-hour moment or an hour moment. And then it's gone. And you're just like, ah, I love people.
Yeah. 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 My husband is the same. You know, he'll always go for, we always try to stay away from the kind of big touristy places and try to go down side streets and find, you know, a little bit that's a bit out of the way, because you always find brilliant people to talk to.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Like whenever we travel overseas, like we get the tourist book and we're like, well, we're not going to see any of that.
No. You
know, that neighborhood sounds good. And we'll post up in like the neighborhood for a week and just like, well, we're going to go to the cafes and bars here and we're just going to meet the people that live here.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Last one. You're doing great.
Thank you.
So what's your favorite story to tell?
Okay. So my favorite story to tell is also from that California trip. So we hired a motorhome and we'd never done the motorhome thing before. So we made a lot of rookie mistakes during this holiday.
Yeah, that's what happened.
The first one is that we turned up to collect our motorhome and they were running late. So we started off late anyway, but we had made the mistake of believing what the maps told us in terms of how long it takes to get from one place to another in the US. And it takes so much longer. So literally every journey you could have doubled. A, because my husband who did the driving was kind of so unsure being in this motorhome. He was probably driving at least 20 miles slower than he normally would. And also because everything just takes so much longer. So we turned up to our first camping spot and we thought that we were going to have lots of time and that we were going to be able to do a little bit of shopping on the way and get some food. Turns out that we literally screeched in. It was pitch black.
Yeah.
We couldn't find where we were meant to kind of park found that in the end. And then it was so dark and we didn't really know where we were. We couldn't go shopping. So all we had for that evening was a quarter of a bottle of water that we had in the van and some dry granola, I think, that we'd stolen from the hotel breakfast bar that morning. So we had, you know, obviously went to bed feeling quite hungry, think we'll get up early and we'll go and do some shopping. Got up early and we turned up to wait for the store to open. We were that early. We're so hungry, we just need some food. But we were parked outside. I didn't realize that we wouldn't tell from the outside, but we were parked up outside the bargain alcohol superstore, not a normal superstore. So literally these people inside must have been thinking, wow, those people, they really need a drink. They have been parked up for half an hour waiting to go in. They must be absolutely dying for some alcohol.
And were you in like a drivable motorhome? So like you were in a motorhome. So you looked like you lived in a motorhome and you needed some booze.
Yes, we'd taken our whole home to go and find some alcohol. Yeah. But I mean, I'm saying that, but we absolutely loved it. We loved going around into all of the different places and parking up, because you can do that in the UK with motorhomes. You can, you know, go and park in places, but it's just so much slicker in the US, where you've got all of these places you can hook up, and you know, then you've got like beaches and stuff close by, and it was just the most amazing time, and I would definitely do it again. But I would know that everything takes at least double the amount of time you think when you're traveling from one place to another.
Well, this has been lovely. You've been a good sport at my weird ass hybrid Q&A strangeness. It's good to see you again, even though we had to turn the camera off.
I know. It's good to hear me is what it is.
It's good to hear you. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the second book. And now that you've got the process down, I'm assuming there's more coming down the pike.
There are. There's going to be a book three and a book four, which is very exciting.
So everybody, you can text her and ask her when the next one's coming.
You can. Yeah. Just don't expect it anytime soon.
Well, you have a great day. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it. The Welsh are the best. I don't really think you guys over across the pond say that enough. Louise is delightful. Delightful. And very much. And I hope I don't. This is not why I think she's delightful. But like, you know, like I said, it's the Appalachia of the United Kingdom. So we laugh a lot and we have a good time. And she's just so down to earth about her writing and what she does, and just loves it. And if you listen to the program, you know, like, not all of us love it. Like, the process is not always fun, but she is just like, you can tell after those 15 years, is like, just wants to write these stories. And it just takes you back as a writer to like that creative time when it was going on. And I love talking to her. The Safe House just came out in May. Obviously working on the next one, but like, get to The Safe House now. Before we get out of here, just a couple reminders. If you like what you heard, leave us a review, Apple Podcast or over at Facebook. Tell your friends about us. Like I tell you, we're part of the Solid Listen Podcast Network, 12 programs. You can sign up for the subscription service over at Apple. Join us on the Patreon network. It's $1, $5 a month. All that stuff, you get it before everybody else without all those crazy commercials. Check out everything. Malls and Nicole have built just a fun little place to be. And don't forget to check out the flagship Mother May I Sleep With podcast with host and our Solid Listen podcast queen, Molly MacLear. I'm slated to be on that show later this year. We will see how that goes. I love Molly. I'm really more concerned about me. Don't forget, The Jam comes out every Wednesday. The after party and jam sessions, those are out Mondays and Fridays for now. After a few months of these, getting you guys used to them, we're going to dial them back to just Fridays. The best way to not miss anything we do, get yourself subscribed wherever you are listening to this podcast right now. And remember, you can always catch us on Twitter and Instagram at The Writer's Jam. Till the next time, I will see you around the internet.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.